Good morning, and I know I'm with a lot of friends here. I know a lot of you already, so I'm not too shy. Still nervous, and I'm going to read it because when you're nearly 86, you're inclined to forget your words otherwise. And so I might have you here all day stumbling around. So here we are. My spiritual journey started a long way back in early childhood. I had a number of models of Christianity to think about. There was Grandpa Bowen, a closed Brethren, and that did not appeal. Then there was Grandfather Allen. He died before I was born, but was my Christian hero as he was pictured by my mother in the Methodist circles. My mother, reasonable, quietly active Presbyterian Christian, ran a great Sunday school, hospitable. She had friends, which was unusual at that time, amongst Catholics, Seventh-day Adventists, the Moral Rearmament, and later the Ecumenical Movement. And she played the organ for the Anglican monthly services in our small country outpost of Maradong. The Baptists. Both the visiting Baptist travelling salesman and the Baptist travelling pastor stayed regularly with us. Mr. Holland, the salesman, was particularly influential. I prayed with him, I sang choruses, and loved his cheerful Christianity. But even then, I was aware of his unscientific fundamentalism and the petty church rules of the Baptist Church at that stage. And as a child, I read my Bible. I used to go around getting people to tell me which verses I should be underlining, and I underlined them, and Christian books, and I prayed from an early age. I had in my heart to be a missionary, but I had no assurance that I was accepted of God, and it worried me a great deal. So I came to Perth for high school, hoping to find a lively Christian church group, but I was disappointed. But then I attended the PFA, I don't know if any of you know, the Presbyterian Fellowship of Australia conference when I was 14, and with wonderful fellowship with lively Christians. And this was a pivotal experience. One morning, in a rather dry seminar, a thought suddenly grabbed me. That's why you don't feel any assurance with God, because you don't trust him to do the best for you. You fear he might have paths for you that you don't want. So at that point, I had God's assurance and peace. Jesus Christ was my Lord, and I would follow him. It seemed straightforward. But there are always complexities. At university, I had to choose between the Evangelical Union, it's now the Christian Union, and the Student Christian Movement, the SCM. I couldn't get anyone in EU to answer my question, what exactly do you mean by the infallibility of the Bible that we had decided on? And the Evangelical Union members were very closed, and, which shocked me greatly, their president that year became an atheist. So I finally chose the more open SCM, and in third year became the co-president with Ronald Wilson, later the Sir Ronald Wilson. great honor, actually. I'm sorry. I followed my mission aim with the Presbyterian Church, who's told me to teach for 2 years and then attend the Deaconess College in Melbourne. But I was there for a year, but their broader teaching with the theologues at Ormond College became a difficulty when I became engaged to Peter Graham here, who was wholly involved with the Evangelical Union. And so I left the college after a year and found my life now centered in his Christian circle, the EU, and then the EU Graduates Fellowship. So it was difficult. But Peter and I did have one aim, you'll be glad to know, to serve God in the developing country, Peter with his medicine, and both of us in sharing the good news of Jesus. And we both came from families who were very hospitable to all sorts of people, so we became an open house from the start. Our first overseas stint was in Soe, in the mountains of West Timor, an outer island of Indonesia. Arriving with our one-year-old Jamie and adding to our family with the birth of Robin, who is now here today. Peter, of course, was straight into the work of the hospital and outlying clinics. I had a lot of angst over my role. I felt I must be a missionary. That was why we were there. But what did I do? I wrote letters home bewailing the fact that I was doing so little and that I was too slow in learning the language. Much of my activity centered on our home with several helpers and high school students and later at primary school as well living with us and becoming the basis of a lively youth group. Then there were people passing through or coming up to Cool Soe for respite, stayed with us. Locals were entertained a lot. So I found a role. But my most vivid experience of God's presence in Soe was when Robin, at 10 months, developed meningitis. Peter was the only doctor. We had no facilities, no running water, no electricity, all sorts of things. And I prayed at her bedside for God's will to be done. I put her in his hands and had such peace. It was quite amazing, and it still amazes me now. She got better. But we certainly didn't know if she was going to live or die. Nor any two other Westerners in the inland with us. Daryl Bolter, and she was a nurse doing midwifery in a little hospital. And Cole, who was teaching in the theological college. That was our team. Altogether, we were 10 years in Asia. After Timor, Java, where Marilyn was born, then in the mountains of Sabah, Malaysia. Each time my role centered on activities at home, youth groups, Sunday school, a respite place for foreigners. Then after time in England, where Peter specialised in ours, we settled back in Australia. And I think Peter and I suffered more cultural shock in Perth than going overseas. The people we mixed with in the Graduates Fellowship of the Evangelical Union. They seemed richer, more worldly, more sophisticated. I spoke about my confusion over the phone, and my friend said, "We just hang in there. That's what you've got to do." While I coped hanging in there, Peter coped with well-disguised depression and hard work. But we were both slowly growing in our Christian outlook. We attended the Presbyterian Church down the road, where the minister regarded me as a conservative Christian. He did a very peculiar thing. He invited four people for an evening to his home. Two very laid-back, very liberal young men, a very fundamentalist American man, and me. I don't know why. We had to share our faith, stand up for it. When I was confused myself as to where I stood, I had to stand up for my faith and yet show my difference to the fundamentalist. The fundamentalist rushed off a bit early, and so the minister farewelled the three of us at the door. And one of them put his arms around the minister and the other man and said something like, "Here's to doubters forever." I felt so isolated, as I was just clinging onto my faith, and here there was no encouragement from my minister. Just a toast to doubting. My role model was my mother, who was on the mission board, taught Sunday school, taught scripture in schools. But I just didn't fit at all, especially scripture teaching. I was a total failure. Anyway, I was busy with three lovely children and also working as Peter's secretary. But gradually, God found unexpected other roles for me. In Amnesty International, to which I devoted long hours for many years, and as part of my role, introduced many church groups to the call to care for those who are in prison. And our home, with a flat extending it, allowed hospitality to expand from missionaries travelling through to lost people needing a bed or a meal or long-term stays, or like Julie Belitho, Roseanne, some of you will know, a long-term stay needing lots of love. So our house really expanded. One night I went downstairs rather late, and I had the lounge room where a minister was staying in a big bed, and there was another bedroom where one of the lost people was, Roseanne actually, was staying. I go down and there he is sharing his bed with these other lost young people watching, because he had the television and they'd come in after he'd gone to bed and asked for television there. And so I said, "Oh, this is terrible. You don't have to have them in your room." "It's okay," he said. "I think you quite liked the mixture." Anyway, that was an extra. At one stage, I attended a Catholic charismatic meeting at the concert hall, and then joined Friday evening charismatic meetings at St. Patrick's in Fremantle. They were very warm and uplifting, and they gave me a peace and joy when I needed those greatly. I'm very grateful for that period. I felt much more at home spiritually when the Uniting Church came into being and we as a family could move to the evening service at Nedland's Uniting with Mr. Semple as minister. And that's where I've met some of you people. Mr. Semple was very open to young people playing a very active role. I felt easy with these young people, started open house dinners on Thursday evenings with a short meditation afterwards. These grew in numbers as the young people were leaving the Netherlands Church and after Mr. Semple retired, and they no longer felt welcome there. Then we followed our young family to St. Matthew's with the vital David Seckham, because the young people that we were with and our young people had left Netherlands, so we followed the family to St. Matthew's with the vital David Seckham. And we felt very at home straight away. So many from Netherlands were already there. By now we counted ourselves, Peter and I, as broadly evangelical and could get on with finding further openings to develop Christian living and outreach. It was a great 11 years with plenty of refreshment, teaching, expansion, but also challenges, disappointments and hurts. It was really quite a mixed experience, and we certainly grew in that time. And I thank God and David for those years. The wideness of our hospitality certainly grew as all sorts of people needed home care. And we started our first formal home group, Outpost. We still have an outpost. And I became church treasurer, for which I had no training whatsoever. So that was a challenge. We were certainly supportive of David when the church split occurred. He had been as accommodating as he could possibly be. The next minister at St. Matthew's was so different, and I found I couldn't just sit quietly in the pew, but challenged a number of things. Most people just wanted to keep quiet and have peace after the split, but there were extra rules of belief listed. A powerful group to be appointed by the rector ruling over the parish council was proposed. I won against that one with the help of the auditor. A list of aims of the church was passed which made no mention of social justice in any form. Women were excluded from the ministry. I certainly wasn't in fear of just sitting placidly in my pew. But I must say, Andrew, the minister, was wonderful at IT. And when he had resigned from St. Matthew's, I offered to write the church's history after it shifted location. And he did a great job in setting up the book from my script. And we worked together there so well. So outside the church theology, he was a great fellow to work with. Under the next minister, the church has grown and grown with wide ministries. But as a number of AGM meetings testify, social justice is not yet listed in its aims. However, when the church was offered a house to take in temporary protection visa refugees in 2000 as a staging post to permanent accommodation, jobs, etc., that seemed to be God's call to me. And I became the coordinator of the St. Matthew's Refugee Support Group. Although Kanishka, the minister, was supportive, the church members who were involved in it were the old-timers from David's ministry. It was very much a fringe activity for the later people, and most of my team of about 20 were outside St. Matthew's. In 2010, I knew it was the right time to close down this ministry as all TPVs were now citizens and new refugee challenges needed people with fresh energy and new skills. And our home certainly had had its skills extended over the years as we had a Muslim refugee mum and three children with us in our flat for 3 years, buying a caravan to sleep the two boys after Dad joined us from detention to spend another year with us in home detention with Peter and me as his major guards. God's leading is full of surprises. I gradually felt less at home at St. Matthew's as it follows so closely the Sydney St. Matthias model and exclusive Anglicanism. So we took the opportunity of old age to retire quietly back to Nedlands United, just a street away from home. And with Steve Francis, his minister, who was a youth worker when our children were teenagers, I thought I would just be a pew sitter in my 80s. But indeed, God has given us a role there with the church's new connection with the Christian University in Kupang, West Timor, Indonesia, our old haunt from the 50s. And I had a new fillip in my spiritual life last year when we studied Galatians in our outpost. The centrality of Jesus Christ is reiterated. The Old Testament, and indeed the New Testament letters, are to be lined up with Jesus. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourself be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. If you are led by the Spirit, Christ's Spirit with us, you are not under law. So for me, it is all about Jesus. Thank you.